We've got Faye Snowden here talking about her A Killing Rain is out June 21st, but it's a sequel to A Killing Fire, technically, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. thank you so much, Faye. I really liked meeting Raven Burns and learning about, all the crazy stuff that she's been through and the crazy stuff that she finds herself in. And so I really, I had a good time reading this book. So
Oh,
thanks.
good.
Thanks for hopping on with us to chat a little bit more about it.
No worries. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah. So, yeah, because it does come across as like almost like a standalone, but I feel like it's definitely advantageous to read the first one because you could kind of get the gist of it, but there's kind of important things that happen that.
Yes, and I think the first one will tell you a little bit more about how she feels about her father being who he is. But you're
Yeah.
right. I worked really hard with my editor to make sure that A Killing Rain, you could read that without having to read A Killing Fire. So you can actually pick that one up and you'll be fine. But you're right, there are a lot of important things you'll miss if you miss a Killing Fire. So.
So when I read things and I'm like, oh no, it's not the first one. And I always like try to do my due diligence and like really get the full circle, the full story of it, the whole package. And so, but no, they were pretty easy reads too, and pretty easy to get sucked into. So, but yeah, I could tell you took the care to like make sure like if it's okay if you didn't get to read the first book, even though I think it's really important though to like kind of really truly understand so much more of who she is and what the kind of decisions she makes. And but yeah, so like we can go into if you want to start off with like a little summary so like people can follow along with the conversation, and you could be a little bit spoilery for A Killing Fire. Gonna try to be spoiler free for Killing Rain.
So A Killing Fire is about a homicide detective who lives in a town called Birds Landing, Louisiana, and her father happens to be a serial killer. And she has spent her whole life, trying to battle against the, she wonders if she, how much she's like her father, because her father actually used her when she was a toddler to kind of lure her to help him with some of the killings, and she's felt guilty about that ever since. So she's trying to kind of through good acts, being a homicide detective, putting men like him away, prove that she's a good person, basically. And so in A Killing Fire, she's actually chasing a serial killer. And Birds Landing in Louisiana is a town that has a lot of serial killers. They just pop out of the woodworks of my mind, basically. Yeah, which is a fictional town. So don't worry if you're ever driving through Louisiana, you're not gonna, pass this town full of serial killers. So there's a serial killer out there, but in this book, the killer is Raven is kind of being framed for it. And so she has to, and the town is already looking at her with a side eye, right? And you're a serial killer and you're a homicide detective. How does that work? So she's, in order to, remain a free woman, she has to prove that she didn't do it. So it's more, there's more, well, it's a lot at stake in the Killing Rain too, but there's her freedom is at stake in a fire. Spoiler ahead, if you haven't read A Killing Fire, it doesn't really have a happy ending because the person is not, not caught, but Raven takes justice into her own hands and that person is punished, right? That's a big decision she made about what needed to happen to that person. And then in A Killing Rain, we get her deciding, you know what? I'm done with all that homicide stuff. I'm done with being a cop. I'm sick of the blood, the gunshots. I'm just sick of everything. I want to, what she thinks of as a normal life. She wants to be normal. So she goes and she asked her old partner who owns a restaurant. He's also no longer a cop, if she could wait tables for him while she decides whether or not, what she's going to do. But what happens while she was doing that, the son of her foster brother is kidnapped by, surprise, surprise, a serial killer. And she has to find out who did it before he's killed. So that's the Killing Rain.
Yeah, a lot. It's funny that I'm like my initial like kind of response or like thought of Raven is like, well, she's definitely got demons, but I think it's just like the one, because he's still like kind of creeping and talking to him and doing like doing his commentary and it's because I think about like it's so interesting about her as a character, because she's very like very focused, she's very diligent in her line of work, and what I noticed from a lot of the other characters interacting with her was like, she's not good at maintaining relationships. She's kind of like
the funny thing is she thinks she is. She's like, when she gets accused of that, and she's like, what are you talking about? I can be and her brother's like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
So something that she doesn't know about herself. Yeah.
Yeah. Even, no matter how like consistent that opinion is, like her hearing it, she's just still like, she's like, okay, well, whatever. Like, I don't know. It's really interesting, because then it's like, well, I don't think I would blame her. Like, if I kept hearing like my serial killer's father speaking and, making his comments here and there, like in my head, I would probably be a little like off-putting too. So I just,
She already has her onboard friend. I had like, we have a saying in my family was, like it goes like, I have room for one toxic friend, and that's why it's already taken. So her dad is her toxic friend riding around in her head, like and that kind of thing. But that spot is taken, right? So maybe that's what she thinks. But it's really interesting for Raven, because I always thought of her as a loner, but she is surrounded by people that really love her in spite of everything that she does. And I'm kind of wondering myself, I mean, I know I'm writing this and I'm creating it, and I have my son, he says, Mom, it's bull crap. You can't say that, because you know what you're going to write. You're making it all up, but sometimes you don't. But sometimes I wonder, is she going to push, especially Billy Ray, if she's going to push him beyond patience and push him beyond the limit. So,
it seems like she's on her way there to be doing that. But, he's still dealing with his PTSD, and I wouldn't say that he's necessarily like making it easy for her to kind of be there for him. But at the same time, like, she ran off to take care of business within like that immediate like aftermath. And it's funny how you say, how your son's like, no, Mom, you're writing it. Of course, like, what you're going to do. But I hear that often with other authors who's like, oh, I don't know, it just happened. Like, I didn't even expect it, but this person did this, or like, then there was a dog in my book. And it was, it's like little decisions like that, or some big, some little, that, it's like totally normal for authors not to like, or it's not part of the plan immediately. And going back to Billy Ray, I think, she doesn't seem very confrontational. And I think that unfortunately that needs to happen if they if they want to salvage or like maintain their relationship, it's, they have to have a conversation. And I think they're both in denial about that. I think they're both like, no, it's fine. Like, or just whatever. That's interesting I want to know too. Is she going to push him away? Are they going to figure it out? Are they going
to
like,
it is so interesting to me how you say that, when you speak to other authors, and when I speak to other authors too, they say they didn't know. But I always think that this is the nerd cantina.
Yeah.
I always think about, heard about Jung, Carl Jung, I think it's pronounced Jung, about the collective unconscious. So it's like that everybody has their own conscious, right? And then you have a conscious of the whole world around you, the view, history, and everything. And to write our stories, we're always pulling from that collective of conscious and they end up in things like our stories and our creative endeavors. I think I'm describing that right. I don't remember. Grad school's been a long time ago. That's how I feel too, because you're actually, well, maybe you're pulling it from your subconscious, but I think that a lot of that comes into the book, things that you may not even realize that you experienced, right? Or things that you didn't even realize you were thinking.
Yeah.
In some dark place in your mind. Yeah.
Yeah. And
for me, it's a dark place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so funny. Like, no, I'm only speaking for myself.
It's dumb. Yeah. There's no lights.
No, that's, yeah. And then, of course, I mean, with the like crime fiction, suspense, thriller genre, that's, I feel like that's almost expected versus, you know, like a fantasy or sci-fi or contemporary piece. It's just, yeah, it depends on like where you're pulling that from. And it is, yeah, because like when I first, like, it took me a while, like when I was like reflecting on the, you know, getting to know Raven as a character, I was like, no, she's been through some shit, and she is year to almost decade, like decades later, she's still dealing with it. And she's still like trying to make up for it. She's trying to prove something to herself, and she's got to like, I don't know. It is a little bit heartbreaking to like, when you think of, yeah, as a child, even what are those types of memories that are like still, you know, kind of lingering in your, either way back in the back of your brain or is at the forefront. Like there are some things that she probably, you know, doesn't remember. And then I thought it was so crazy, like how complicated her relationship was still with him. It seemed like, because she would, you know, when you describe the scene of him being executed, which was like, now we really saw like full Floyd burned crazy. I felt like that was like the pinnacle of, because you know, you kind of feed the reader in a little bit here and there, like, well, yeah, he's a serial killer, and obviously serial killers are like very like disturbed people, and there's a whole bunch of literature about like why do humans do that. That's like, yeah, you know. And but like to really see that, because like, yeah, you kind of, when it came to her, when it came to Raven, it was like he was still like being a dad, he was still like, it was so, yeah, it was so like, but to like kind of juxtapose those two, you know, that father figure, that like his parenting style with the rest of him and how he present, and then how he's presenting himself to the world, and to complete those things that he does, and then to kind of see like the real, that when he was being executed, I felt like that was really like, that was the climax. That was like really leading up to really the other end of this extreme that he is.
Yeah.
I just felt like that scene was like so powerful and so messed up. It's so like, and then for Raven, when she's describing it, like she still feels that, like that attachment. She's still looking like a little terrified too. Like she's still, there's still something that's not sitting right with her, which of course it's like understandable. It's her dad, but at the same time, it's like everything she witnessed and all the, everybody, like everything she knows that this person is, that her father is. And she was still like reaching at the glass. Like,
I know,
you know, yeah. That's what I thought was so crazy.
And I like the way you put that, that she's still reaching at the glass, right? And then that's how it's, you know, it's real powerful. And I'm a parent. My kids are grown now. I've done my damage. So they're, you know, I'll just have to lay on the couch and say, my mom did this to me. But I don't think I did a terrible job. But I know there are some parts of my life that I keep compartmentalized from them, right? And not because I, for him, he had to, but not because I had to. Because it just didn't come up. Like if you ask my 30-year-old son, what do I do? And he'd be like, well, sometimes she writes books, and then there's some computers and maybe some code. But other than that, right? It's like, you only really know a person when you're sitting at their funeral. Yeah. This is so sad. Oh my gosh. And then some people, I know, like, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening.
Right.
But some people come up and, you know, you hear all their different sides of them. Like, you know, the coworkers come up and you hear it one side. And then, you know, the distant cousins come up and you end up, you know, you hear about how they roller skated, you know, they roller skated all over the neighborhood.
Right.
And TP people's houses. And then the kids come up and like, my mom didn't cuss in the house. And then her Navy friends came up and like, your mom cusses like a
sailor. Right.
And it's like, you don't really get to know them. But I think with other thing about parenting too is, and Toni Morrison said this thing, and I'm no Toni Morrison, of course, but I love her personality as well as her writing. But she said this one thing that I take to heart to this day. And she says, when you see a child walk into a room, you just show them how happy you are to see them, how great they are, and how, because she had a son that passed away. And she was like, just that is your job, right? And then know that even the little things, and I've messed up before, right? And I said little things to my kids, they still remember today. The little things that you think are not going to be, you know, they're just not, they're not no big deal or whatever. They'll remember that well into, and those voices do live in
yeah.
I still hear my mom. Fool. Yeah. Yeah. And she'll be like, she's passed away, but she's like, I never said that. I'm like, well, yes, you did.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
like,
so
you probably thought to, that, it's like you probably thought you weren't listening or something.
Yeah, like. Exactly. Or she doesn't believe that she would ever say anything like that, right? Because right. I would never say, I never spanked you. I know. Yeah, and you're looking at it. But I just think that it's so important because kids are so impressionable, right?
They really are. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what's happening. And then also for abusive parents, you have that push-pull, right? I've also read about, I don't remember where you still love them because you're parents, and so you need them for survival. So you are, you know, you're not push-pull, but I think you go to them, right? But then they do these things that push you away. But then because in a way you're programmed to love them for your survival. So, and that's how I feel like Megan, I'm sorry. That's how I feel like Raven.
It's okay.
That's where I think Raven is. She still loves her dad, but you know, she understands that was a very, very evil, sick man.
Yeah. And I've heard that that kind of concept too, where with children who grow up with abusive parents, it's that attachment that they can't get away from it. Really. Yeah. Because it is the survival. It's like their caretaker. They love them. And then it's so like, you know, they get all this abuse from them. It's definitely like it rewires the brain, of course, too. Or I should say rewired. It wires it. Cause it's like starting off, you know, and it's, yeah. And I have like a almost 5-year-old and an 18-month-old. And so now, yeah, like it kind of changes that outlook too. Cause when I'm like reading, like I've got little baby Raven watching these horrible things and like knowing, but then like she knows even then at that age, like this is horrible. But then she's like, her dad is telling her, you know, you're going to go to hell and your mom's going to come down with you. Like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, that would scare the shit out of me too.
You know, you're so funny because you're reminding me, because these are all the passages that scares the shit out of me. And then, but nobody ever mentioned them before. Like done these, nobody really said that passage scares me. And then the, I know I wrote it, but I don't remember. And then, there was another one that I'll think of in a minute that scares me. But I tell you, when I first heard the audio book for Killing Fire.
Yeah. That's how I listened. I listened to the audio book. Before I started reading. Yeah. So that's why I heard, like, I think it's different when you're hearing it versus reading it.
Yeah. The first time I heard Floyd's voice, and I was driving home from work and I almost like went over to the side of the road. I mean, I just thought she did such a good job on Floyd.
I know. I always get so impressed by like the voice actors and narrators, like having to get creative with all the different voices and, with all the characters' voices. So it was not, yeah. So, cause sometimes it's like campy or they're trying too hard, but yeah, it gets tricky, especially cause Floyd is just such like he's just always kind of like there and he's terrifying. And poor Raven is like the one who like his reluctant sidekick. It was like, and it's so messed up to think of it that way, but that's like essentially what it, you know, he was less threatening because he had a little girl with him. And
yeah.
She also becomes attached to these people just crazy how that will like mess someone up. And so, yeah, it was. And then so kind of her taking that, like, so did you play around with the different types of personalities that like, or personality traits that Raven might have? Cause I guess like there's like a million, like there's so many ways you could have taken this, like with her and her character but making her like really, like work so hard and really strive, like make it her life's mission to like make up for those mistakes that weren't even like, I don't know, like they could be seen as mistakes, but it was just also like she had, you know, she couldn't do anything about it. And so like, yeah, it's still that guilt. And so did you play around with building her character at all, or like kind of, you know,
for some reason, I had to Floyd because I knew he was just going to be some evil guy, right? Some evil guy. But he actually came to me, and I think his character is pretty much developed. But he was kind of an easy one because he was like, it's just going to be an evil guy.
Yeah.
Right? For Raven, the way I started that book was with a question. How would a person navigate life if they had a dad like this? That was the question I started with. So, but for Raven, I did have to develop her, and I used, I hope it doesn't sound like enema, but have you ever heard of the Enneagram? It's like the personality trait thing. And I had to use her. I had to use that for her. And then I had to interview her to figure out what her wants, fears, you know, desires, you know, what she's like. And I said this before on other podcasts, but what she's like drunk, what she's like sober, yeah. What are her pet peeves, you know, what's in her closet. I had to do that to make her seem real.
Yeah.
And then Billy Ray, not as much. He kind of came fully formed to me, but he does have some stuff going on in his background, which I think I may use him, and I kind of hinted at it in the fire that I'm going to use in the third book. It's really hard for me to get into my main character because sometimes I think that people are going to see that as me, and I act like I'm extroverted, and I'm an introvert in an extrovert's clothing.
Yeah,
there's something, and you listen if you ever listen to anything else I do. So you just tell all your business out there, but there are some things I really try to keep private, right? And then it just sometimes I'm really tentative with my protagonist, but and I had to work out that to make sure that she was fully developed. Yeah.
And so is that something that's because this isn't like your first novel? I mean, it seems so you do like, a mix of short stories and novels. They're like about the same for each, right? Like you don't have more short stories than novels and vice versa. From what I was looking at your website,
it's about the same. It's about the same. You're right.
Yeah. So is that kind of like the same process, like how you do you go through that same process whenever, you know, for all of your works, or is it something that was like kind of, you know, because Raven is a little bit more complicated. Was that you had a little more extra work for her?
Yes, I did have to do a little bit more extra work for Raven. And then I did have to work on her to make sure she seemed authentic. For my short stories, I don't do character development. I don't. Because you don't have the room, right? Mm-hmm. But I try to do like little things that would hint at somebody's character. Like I just have a short story that's coming out or came out in Low Down Dirty Vote. And this short story is about the theme is on voting, and it's the color of my vote. And it gives money to the, you know, to voting causes and whatnot, like $10,000. I mean, it raises a lot of money for that. But this one character, I wanted this character to be where she was always doing something for somebody else, but she never really did anything for herself. She was always, you know, really like nicest, kindest kind of person. So, and then she also wanted a vote to go her way on the school board as well. And to kind of show her character, I had her being cordial to the man who almost, who you could say caused her husband's death. Right. Mm. Because when he was arguing with her husband when he died of a stroke, he had high blood pressure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that's not a spoiler. It's just a story. The story's not called for the funeral. And then there's her cousin who I wanted to seem like she was just like a take no shit kind of person. So her cousin at the funeral was talking crap about the reverend, right? Because it was hot and everybody wanted to go home. So that's how I kind of put her character out there. So I'll just like do very small brush strokes when I'm doing like a short story, but not when I'm doing a novel. I think if you have to do that in a short story, then you're in trouble with a short story.
Yeah, for sure. Or like you might as well just see if you need to, you know, make it a novel. if something's speaking out to you more, or if like you can't let certain things go, like you gotta talk about certain things, if you have to flesh it out more, then maybe there's something more there that's like it should happen organically, and then that's okay. It's okay, right? If you start somewhere and it's not working out, I'm just saying that. Yeah, I just think it's really interesting when authors when they do different things, you know, different, they contribute to either different collections, either they're commissioned for it or they just, it got picked up and, you know, included in something, which is always very cool. But yeah, it's just always interesting to kind of like see how the process changes based on, you know, plus with the experience too, like I'm sure your process is different now than it was for your first book, you know, and you've had to like learn and grow and all that, you know,
every single book. And I do it. Neil Gaiman says that you learn to write a book with every single book. I swear, sometimes I pull out like 9 different, all those are my behind me on my bookcase are all writing books. Sometimes I'll try 3 or 4 methods before I can get in the groove of writing. Because it's doubt, right? It's just this horrendous doubt. You're staring at the blank screen or your yellow legal pad and that's looking at you, taunting you. What are you gonna do?
Right? Yeah. why am I empty?
I'm talking crap. And you're like, dang. And then and I have my own editor in my head even before So I learned about every new book. The one that I really found that works, and that's probably why I don't use it. It makes me go faster. I use it, but it's called Book in the Bag. Jess Lawrie's does the Book in the Bag method. I don't know if you've heard of it. That I like using that one. And that's how I wrote this book, using
the Book in
the Bag. And because I wrote it during the pandemic and there was a whole bunch of, everything that was going on in the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I needed something to keep me focused, and that method kept me focused for this book.
And you're not alone. There's like a lot of authors I talked to who were releasing, it's either they were writing during the pandemic or they were releasing a book when all of it started going down. And you know, I feel for authors who that was like their debut and they had to like tread uncharted territory, and then plus business is very not as usual on top of it. And it was crazy. It was definitely a crazy time. And, a lot of authors, everybody almost in every industry was in the same boat. But I think a lot of what was unique about authors during that time was that they used the time, like not just to pick up a hobby, but to really like hone in on maybe their to-do list or really use that. Cause everybody, we were all forced to confront ourselves and it
was, really were, right?
yeah and that's like really the best way that I could put it. It's like
I actually started baking bread.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people did that. I'm sorry, I did too. I did a ciabatta bread the other day.
Oh nice.
Your mama for some more, give me some more of that bread,
right?
And I know a lot of people did that, but it was just something about, and I wasn't doing all the kneading and all that.
Okay.
I used my stand mix. But it was still just like the waiting, and then it almost was like magic, right? You had control over something. When I was younger, it used to be running.
Yeah,
I could run, that's how I'm keeping in shape. But now I'm older, I don't necessarily do any of that.
It gets harder.
It
gets harder. No, I'm right there with you because I'm a runner too. And that was, what definitely one of the ways, because like when everything shut down, you just run. Can I run outside? Is the weather going to be decent? Like, okay. Or I'll go for like a 2-hour walk, like just to get some air, just to get some vitamin D, just to like do something. And it was crazy because I found out I was pregnant with my second, like a few weeks, like 2 weeks after Illinois anyway, shut down. And it was just like, well, okay, I guess it'll be easy to like, conceal the first 12 weeks until I feel like free to announce it. But
isn't that,
because it was like I didn't have to like back up, like why aren't you drinking, or like what are you, I didn't have
to do any of that.
So that part was good. And it was like at the same time I didn't feel like I was missing out on much really, because everything was just shut down and everything. But yeah, it was, the thing was like the gym, when that was like shut down, I was like, oh god, okay, like what else can I do here, grab the dog, let's go for a walk. But no, I get it too. Running, when you get older, running's harder. Like even now it's like I still do my best, but I'm like, it's like, oh man, like five miles seems so long when I used to
I know. I know, like, I mean, You know, to me, I used to call 3 mile a baby run. Yeah. I was like, okay, let's just do this baby run. And now I walk 3 miles. I'm like, hey.
Yeah, right. You're like, wait.
Call the medic.
Yeah. Like, why is this still going? Like, why am I not done?
Exactly. This thing must be broken. Their GPS must be broken. Well, I messed up my knees. The doctor told me, no more. You can't do this anymore. And I was so upset that I didn't, I ended up not doing anything for years. And that's how I got, you know, I got out of shape. But I'm starting to walk. I'm trying to accept it a little bit. So
could you do like elliptical or like walk uphill, like do treadmill?
No, I just walk outside.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like Modesto, California, no hills. No.
Okay.
And I'm still like, call a medic.
Right. Like, wait, I see a hill up there. This isn't going to work. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's so funny. So get back to the writing.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Right.
Yeah. Oh, you know, we went down that pandemic rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So let me see. Oh, what like attracts you to like the crime suspense genre? Because I feel like just from looking at the titles of your other works and stuff, or like, and then this the covers, it kind of seems like you're on the like the more eerie side, the like yes, the darker yeah. side. So kind of like what draws you to that?
It's like a Southern Gothic style, it's dark, you know, the darkness. And then people tell me, I don't know if it's true, but they tell me, you're the nicest person, but you write some dark stuff. And so I think what I like about genre fiction in general and crime fiction, first of all, I believe that if you got a good story to tell, tell it in any way you know how. Don't worry about the genre, really just tell the story that you want to tell. But most of the stories I want to tell involves bullets, guns, and knives.
Yeah. So, right.
So that's what attracts me. It's the violence. Because I'm from this country and it's like, I just see things and I grew mm-hmm. up in a not so nice neighborhood, you know, kind of seeing all that. And I just think that I just kind of want to explore that a little bit. And then the other reason is because I'm lazy, right? Because the rules are already there, the conventions for the genre that you're writing. And so I use the time that the extra time that I have to actually build on a good story, to build on my story and the themes and explore questions that I want to explore. You know, it's kind of like leaves me it's like driving to work rather than taking a train. You know, if I take the train, I can sit there and I can do other yeah. work. I can play with these different things and possibilities. Yeah. And yeah, kind of like that.
No, I like that. I like how, but you're acknowledging it, that you're like, I don't know, like, yeah, I'm like this nice, cheery person, but I like writing about that, like, you know, the violent and the death and stuff. But I think that, you know, kind of go on to your comment about, you know, how you grew up and just things that you've observed and stuff. It's like, it's just like, you know, there's so many people whose stories like relate to that, who, you know, grew up in different parts of different neighborhoods or like all over the country. And that's kind of part of it, like to find a way to explore that, to find a way to almost like a self, you know, awareness and a self reflection. And, you know, that's a way to kind of like exercise that without letting that environment have a different effect on you.
Yeah. To kind of explore it in a safe way. And I just remember, like, I remember because when I saw things represented on TV, you saw, you know, these happy families and everybody, you know, doing the sitcom type things. And I was like, yeah, I didn't grow up anywhere like that. And so it was just kind of explore, you know, parents that did not have it all. Well, Floyd really does not have it.
Nope.
Kind of exploring stories because that, you know, my parents didn't have it together and they'll tell you that. But just trying to like tell those types of stories where if somebody says Happy Mother's Day to you, you may tell them to go, you know what?
Right.
You know, that's I wanted to explore that kind of, and I think that's why, that's a question nobody's ever asked me for. And really, what attracts me to it is almost honoriness, you know, like, you know, not everybody had a happy childhood. Not everybody had parents that would do, you know, that would, that could or would support them. Not everybody. And so I was kind of wanting to write a little bit more about that as well.
Yeah. And that's important that you're, you know, you don't want to read a book by someone who's writing about an impoverished family, but obviously they have not missed a meal. It's like, you know, you want to make sure. Yeah. You want to make sure the stories that you're putting out there, it's so important that, you know, that's coming from a place of like authenticity and experience. And, you know, that's why, yeah, it's super important to like, to find your way to channel that and to navigate through it and create something out of it. And, you know, and hopefully if some people find it relatable, that's fantastic, you know, and it's hopefully that helps someone else down the line too. But yeah, no, it's super important. Like, I mean, that's what they, you know, I know it sounds cliche, but that's like the whole point about like, you know, diversity and all that stuff, because there's so many stories to tell and there's so many different ways to tell those stories. And that's why it's just so important to like that everyone can feel free and safe to do that.
Right. And then you're reading about those other lived experiences by somebody that, you know, in some ways they're writing in such a way that you believe that they've lived them. Like one of the things I remember if I was a kid, and I don't ever remember reading this. Okay. And then like, we missed a few meals, right? Especially during the month. And we would have a TV, of course. And then somebody says, well, how are you so hungry? And you have a TV, because I bought the TV when we had money, right?
Right.
Yeah, like I'm not going to sell my TV. You know, who's going to buy it for me in my neighborhood? But anyway, so we would be watching TV and there would be something like a pie fight on a game show or a commercial with all this food. But the worst to us was watching TV when we were 2 days hungry and seeing somebody waste food, like having a food fight.
And yeah.
I mean, I would just want to like lick the screen. Like, why are you wasting all that food?
Right.
I have never heard anybody use that as, you know, growing up poor in a book, but I experienced it. You know, my family are watching your brother because there's no food. I think it was no food, but my sister says probably another reason. But watching that individual take a bite of an onion because that's the only thing in the refrigerator, you know, things like that. I think it's important because if you read stories like that and they get to you, then maybe, you know, you'll think about it twice and maybe you'll do something about it, or maybe you'll donate, or maybe you'll think about hunger in a different way, right? So that's why I think you're right. That's why, and not just saying that, Black, everybody who've been poor have had some of these experiences that I'm hoping that if we can't all relate to, we can at least understand, right?
Yeah, or just at least acknowledge that like those experiences exist. Like
exactly.
At the very least, like to try to not like discredit or deny like anybody else what they're describing that they went through, because it's like, well, it happens. Like people unfortunately do live like that, and we could go down another rabbit hole too. But yeah, to your you know, defense, the television is a one-time payment versus.
We bought that sucker on time and it got paid off.
yeah. Besides like having to keep replenish or food and
I don't know about the food fights, but on the commercials, you know, it's not real food. It's edible and all that stuff.
Yeah. That's why, that's why your McDonald's. Yeah. That's why your McDonald's burger never looks as good.
Like, but it's good. Like, what is this? Where's my leafy green lettuce?
Right. Maybe nowadays with like the Instagram and the TikTok and all that, they can like make it look like amazing. But it's you get it from the little cardboard box. It's just like, oh, that's how they got you. That's how they got you.
They eat them with two hands. They'll eat the burgers with the two hands.
No, right?
Like, no way.
Like, no, this isn't. I do not need two hands to eat.
A fish sandwich. No.
You're right. I know, it's so true. Oh gosh. Yeah. I get to thinking about a lot of things and, you know, cause yeah, Bird's Landing, it's small town, and I get I get the idea that it's almost like a drive-through town. Like it's not, you know, people, like if people like know that you're not from there, the people from there know that you're not from there. And it's, I thought it was interesting too, because I've been to New Orleans once, and so I was like, I try, because like the setting and the town can act as its own character too.
Yeah.
And so I just think like, yeah, I think like when I'm reading about these new settings, I'm like, oh, like, what do I remember about, you know, I'm like, can I picture it in my head? And usually, yes, if the writing is good enough. So like, yeah, it kind of gave me the impression of like small town, you know, small community, tight-knit community, especially since everybody knows who she is. And yeah, they know, like, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're almost like, it took a long time for them to kind of like, okay, you know, like, maybe she's okay. Like, maybe she's trying, you know. So just a few more questions before we wrap up here. Is this your first series?
It's my second series. My first series, it was, No More, it got canceled by Kingdom. What was it? Oh, it was a Richard T. Marvel series about an Oakland. Well, it was another made up community based out of Oakland. I did that a number of years ago, but this is my, I think this is my first limit. Would you call it a limited series? Because I'm only writing 4 books: Earth, Winter, Earth, Air, Water, Soil, and then after that, it's done. So
That makes sense too. Because if you're trying to go with that theme, you know. Like the title theme and stuff like that. This is a question that I like asking authors because I think the answers are so interesting. So what were the most challenging parts to write and then like the most enjoyable? And you could go over both books if you want to reach into the Killing Fire one.
I'll start with the Killing Fire one. The most enjoyable parts to write was the actual contemporary the scenes set in the present. You know, I did enjoy writing the scenes that were set in the past with her dad, you know, in the Raven scenes. But after a while, I just ran out of steam because that was some pretty heavy stuff. You're right. And it was, and then I was worried about exhausting the reader. And so I had a lot of doubt. In A Killing Rain, the scenes that were from the past or the scenes that I thought that, because I thought people were going to be disappointed that Floyd is not as present. I don't know. Did you think that he was as present in A Killing Rain?
I mean, maybe not so much, but she's trying to figure out how to get rid of him. So it kind of like, it made sense a little bit. You know, plus also she's got a little bit much going on, like dealing with the, you know, consequences of her actions from the first book. And, you know, she doesn't have a whole lot of help. And she's also trying to like get out of the force and move on. And so she has a lot going on. But I would say, like, because I know that, you know, especially at the beginning, at least I noticed that she was like trying to figure out how to like keep the voice out of her head. Yeah. And so I think that's reflects in that.
Okay. So I think on the second one, it was definitely harder to write the Floyd, you know, kind of bringing Floyd in there. Cause it just felt kind of forced to me and I didn't want it to be forced.
Yeah.
But I've had people that have read the books and I just want to know about Floyd and her. That's all I want to know. How do they travel around? I mean, you are a sick puppy. That's all I wanted. And it was the older woman too. She was like, say, this is what I want, you know, and I'm like,
no, right.
And she said, I would love to read a book just with Floyd and Raven. During that, you know, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah, I bet.
Because I know there's violence in this book, but I think to me that would be almost gratuitous. I don't know. I don't know. I have to think about that though.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting kind of like reading about what she remembers from what she witnessed, because I imagine kind of going back to like processing memories as a child versus as an adult. And it's, yeah, kind of like how I touched on before, like you could go, you'd almost go to multiple avenues with that. So, yeah, it's so funny that your friend, she's like just go watch like a true crime documentary or something like that.
Yeah. They exist. I mean, people are.
Yeah, right. That's tricky enough anyway. So what advice would you give to Raven?
Oh my goodness. I would let all my Zen out. I believe that there is absolutely no way or no that you could prove to someone that you're good enough. So I think the advice that I was going to give to her is realize that you are good enough. Forgive yourself, even if you think you did something wrong, just forgive yourself and then get on with your life. That you want to get on with your life, not following everybody else's expectations.
Yeah, that's so important. I think she's, because unless otherwise she's just going to keep chasing that, or she just, she either is not going to ever reach that, or she just has to like be at peace with herself, you know, which is not, I have a feeling it's not going to come that easy for her.
No, because in each book at the end, she's going to make a decision that's going to push her to where she's going to end up.
And then last one. So what can readers expect in the next installment, more from Raven?
Well, they can expect, without giving any spoilers, but they can expect more crime fighting that she's going to have to do in one way or the other. Definitely more of Floyd. And then some of the same characters that appeared in A Killing Rain will return in the next one. And I was telling somebody else that it can't, well, my sons, I have two boys. Do you have boys or girls? Or
well, they're both boys, yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know if you've entered the fart stage yet, but every time you say the word fart, they fall out and laugh. And
Well, the four-year-old, he's like, he thinks talking about poop is the funniest thing. And I was like, okay, like, okay, enough, we get it. Like,
yes. So I have to come up with a title for the third book, and it can't be A Killing Wind. Yes. So that's my dilemma. So, but the element that people, could you imagine? They would kill me on Twitter.
Oh my God. But hey, people would probably pick up the book for sure, at least. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, you're going to have to bust out a thesaurus for that one.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, right? So I've gotten some ideas that people have given me. So it's going to be on based on air or the lack of air or something like that. And so I'm going to have some of the characters that appeared in Rain for the first time. They're going to have a dilemma in the second or the third book that are going to involve Raven pulling out her homicide detective skills in some manner. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think more Floyd. I think I'm going to put more Floyd in there this time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I missed that little bastard.
Yeah, I don't know. It's something. Yeah. No, I agree. There's something about him where you're
just. He's so charming.
Yeah. That was part of it. That's like so many serial killers were very approachable and personable, and they had that charisma, and it's. Yeah, it's crazy. So that's funny though. And I do get it. There's something about them, him that, you know, I don't mind him sticking around. It's just like, it's like, okay, Raven, I think I understand what you're going through a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
That little attachment there. So, all right. Face note in. Okay. So Killing Fire is out now. Killing Rain is coming out June 21st. Thank you so much. This was such a pleasure. So cool. You know, talking about just getting into your mind a little bit and digging in a little bit deeper. Yeah.
Thank you for all the insightful questions. Most appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah. I just, like I said, I think some of the answers are just so interesting, and especially when it's something of this, you know, nature.
Yeah.
It's like, what happened? How did she come here? How did she get to this, like, type of thing? So, yeah. So, you got your website and are there any like social media stuff that you want to push out?
Yeah. Twitter. I'm mostly on Twitter, and my Twitter handle is Faye_Snowden. And I mostly hang out on Twitter. I'm trying Instagram. I'm supposed to look at TikTok, but I don't think I'll
ever. No, I don't. I feel like there's just another way for me to like get sucked into the internet and be less productive. So
And I do hang out on Facebook. I have an author page, but I don't use it anymore.
Yeah.
It's my regular Facebook page.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah, I feel you. But yeah, okay. No, I'll definitely keep an eye out for the next one.
Well, you know.
I appreciate
it. Thank you. It's been fun.